Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a Gibson's Bookstore podcast. I'm Ryan. My pronouns are she, her.
I'm Kate. My pronouns are also she, her.
I'm Ashley. Also she, her.
Uh-huh.
Holy moly, it's been a minute.
February doesn't count.
No.
It doesn't have the full number of days, Therefore we round down, and it does not exist. January, yes, March.
January, March.
Mm-hmm.
Almost April. It's fine.
It's fine.
It's just books.
We're all real busy.
Yeah.
Reading books.
Yeah.
We keep scheduling events for the day when we usually record in the store, so we can't do it. That's what keeps happening.
The light bulb just turned on.
Yeah. I keep scheduling events for Thursdays, and then we can't record on Thursday because I'm too busy getting ready for the event.
That makes sense.
That's the issue. But now we're here on a Sunday, and we're doing the thing.
Yay!
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
Important things. Indie Bookstore Day is Saturday, April 25th. 10 to 4, we'll have shenanigans happening in the bookstore.
Absolutely.
Many good times. Kate's going to be Zoltar again.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I have a proper tent this time.
Oh, boy. Indie Bookstore Eve.
It's going to be so fun.
Audiobook climbing nights.
Yes.
So excited.
Yes.
Really glad that our local rock gym... I'm taking one quarter credit for this because I frequently go to the rock gym straight from work and am often wearing something bookish, if not outrightly Gibson's related. And we're pretty friendly with everyone who works there. And one of the girls at the desk also really likes books and reached out to Ryan, was like, hey, let's do this. Yeah. And obviously we need to do this. So.
And I was like, yes.
Yeah, so we're doing it.
We're doing it.
Yeah.
So Friday, the 24th,
yes,
you can come rock climb while listening to your audiobook. It's from 6 to 8. Links on our website. Registration is $25, and that covers everything for you. It's going to be a time.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
And if you don't bring your audiobook, I'll sit on the ground and read you whatever I happen to find in my bag.
Yes, good.
Don't worry, it's books.
It's books. Can't guarantee it'll be the book you want to read, but it'll
Well, then
be
you should
a
have
book.
Remembered your audiobook.
Exactly. I'm helping you prepare for the future.
It's true.
You can count this as a continuing education credit.
Absolutely.
In your staff training file.
Yes. Incredible. Also on April 28th, which I think might be a Tuesday or maybe a Wednesday, but it's the 28th. We have Emma Straub at the Bank of New Hampshire stage. Get your tickets.
Yes.
Come see Books Are Magic, lady.
And it is a Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday. Look at me go.
She's coming to us on purpose, you guys. We have to go see her.
She's so cool. We love her. Your ticket comes with a book. And then you get to meet her afterwards. And she's real cool. So you should come to that.
And if you forget your ticket, I will read you something from my purse in the parking lot.
Oh, goodness. I think that's everything I wanted to say up at the top. Let's talk about what we've been reading recently.
Yeah!
Who wants to go first? Okay, I'll go first. Okay. So, some books that I have finished recently. I read Fabulous Bodies by Chuck Tingle, which comes out July 7th. Wow! This is his Love Is Real book.
Ooh.
It's so delightful and so insane. And there's I'm trying to think of, like, what I can say that won't be a massive spoiler, but that will make you read this book. There's a very famous singer who dies a horrible death, and then there he is again. And adventure ensues. It's great. It's great. It's Chuck Tingle. What are you doing? Just pre-order it. I read Devil Inside by Clay McLeod Chapman. That one comes out August 11th. He will be here for Bookstore Romance Day.
Yes!
That Saturday. Because this is a horror-mance! It is a romance between a dude and a demon who keeps body hopping, and they have a real great meet cute, and they fall in love, and it's so horrifying, and also has a happily ever after. Good job, Clay.
Perfect.
He did it. I read the newest book in the Strange series by Uketsu. This one is Strange Buildings. It's the purple one.
I was going to say the same thing. The purple one.
It's the purple one. It's real good. I love that series. They're very weird and sinister and also very good mysteries. It's just the right amount of, like, what the heck am I reading? And then it all comes together at the end and you're like, oh my God. What a great mystery. Okay. I read Worry Box by Chris Panettiere. Holy moly. All right. This book comes out September 22nd. He's coming here for the launch. He'll be here on launch day. Gotta come. This book, I was trying to describe it to was it Kate or Ash? Which one of you was it? And I was smashing the book against my face.
That was me.
That was Kate.
I came in to ask some sort of nonsense bookstore question and found Ryan beating herself in the face with the book like a medieval monk in the back room.
I was describing this book to my husband, and because he's taking a break from horror for now, so he was like, you can spoil it. Like, I can tell you just want to talk about it. Like, go ahead. You can just tell me everything. And I literally cried while telling him about this book, because they're all just doing their best. there's a house that is, like, sentient. It's not really haunted. It, like, is the house. The house is a character. It has its own point of view chapters. There's a foster kid who is, you know, she's with her foster family in this new house. She has really bad intrusive thoughts, like really bad intrusive thoughts. But she's like doing her best not to act on them, and she writes them down and she puts them in her worry box so that she can get them out of her head and into the box. And then there's the foster family. There's, like, the sister who's obsessed with the paranormal, and she's like, this house has a ghost! And she's trying to figure that out. And there's the dad who was also a foster kid, so he's, like, doing his best to make sure everything with Layla, his foster kid, is, like, going great. And then there's the mom who's just kind of along for the ride, and she's like, yeah, I love my foster child, and also I have a new baby, and, maybe things are not safe for my new baby, because the house finds the worry box and the house thinks something bad's gonna happen, and the house thinks it needs to get rid of the foster kid.
Oh no.
Uh-oh.
Oh no. This book had me so stressed.
When you finished beating yourself in the face with it, you said something like, I'm different now.
I yelled at Chris Panettiere a lot. I was like, what have you done to me? I haven't felt this much while reading a book, like, maybe ever. God, they're all... Every single character in this book is doing what they think is best for the family. and none of it is good.
Oh, buddy.
It's real good. You all need it. Come to the event. Oh, my God. On the complete opposite end of the spectrum, I really wanted to get the prompt for our reading challenge out of the way that's read a biography of someone you hate. The second half is by someone you love, written by someone you love. I don't really have a favorite biographer except for, like, maybe Ron Chernow, and I don't hate any of his subjects yet. So I just focused on that first part. And so I read a book called The Founders by Jimmy Soney. Boy, oh boy. This book is about the founders of PayPal. Oof.
Cool guys. Real cool guys. Role models.
Real.
Champions.
Real cool guys. I mostly picked this one up because it has Elon Musk on the cover.
Coolest
and
guy.
I was like,
oh, yeah.
The leader of the cool guys.
I was like, oh, that's someone I hate.
But Ryan, he's so cool.
I'll read that. And I gotta tell you, it's funny because even in a book that is like objectively not trying to paint any of these people in a negative light. Like, it is just the story of PayPal.
Just the facts, ma'am.
It's just the facts. He still comes across as such a loser. He's so pathetic that even a biography that is, like, supposed to be like, and we had this nice conversation, and, like, whatever, he's, like, a pretty cool guy. I was like, no, he's not. Listen to the things he said to you. He's a loser. He's always been a loser. And this was written, like, way before any of his recent shenanigans. So, like, even then, they couldn't make him sound cool. Sorry, Jimmy Soney. I don't recommend that book. Jimmy Soney did nothing wrong. It's perfectly well written. It's, you know, an interesting enough story. But I just couldn't. I was like, this is so painful. I listened to it on 2X, and it still took me like 2 weeks to read it. I was like, this is the longest book that's ever been written. No, it's not. Every time I thought it was ending, there was another chapter. No. And I was like, no! I thought we were done with this.
He kept going to cross off your bingo square. Oh, then you had to cap the dauber again and put it away. And it was so disappointing.
It's exhausting. One that wasn't exhausting was Wretch by Eric LaRocca. It's real good. Real good Eric LaRocca book. He's great. It's, I think his editor described him as, like, the Prince of Grief.
Ooh.
And I was like, yeah. They write grief horror so well, and it's so weird and upsetting.
Perfect.
She's such a good writer. It was really funny. I was reading it at work the other day, and I was, like, down to the last, like, 20 pages. I was on, like, the last chapter, and I had it at the desk, and two customers in a row were these adorable little older ladies and would come up and go, "Ooh, you're almost done." And I'd be like, "Yeah, I'm going to finish today." And I would, like, put it down, and they'd be like, "Let me see, what are you reading?" And I would tell them what I was reading, and I'd be like, "Yeah, it's just horror, but it's really beautifully written." And they both of them were like, "Oh, wow, that honestly sounds really good." And I was like, "You go, ladies."
This was the second time this week, this conversation, that I've been there while you finished a book.
Yes.
And I can confirm that is exactly what happened with those ladies.
It was really cute. They were really into it.
They were super, like, interested.
Yeah, he writes these, like, really grotesque horror novels, and they're beautiful. He's writing horrible things, but he's doing it so beautifully that you can't look away. Oh, that sounds really interesting. I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess if you're into that, like, I do recommend them. It's very funny. I finished a book yesterday called You Should Have Been Nicer to My Mom by Vincent Tirado. And it's a Dominican horror. And it's a basically like a locked door mystery. Mm-hmm. Real fun. So, like, very strong, like, Agatha Christie vibes, but with a demon.
Okay.
So fun.
That sounds real good.
It's a family gathers together for the reading of the will of the patriarch of the family. And instead of getting the real will, they're delivered this, like, note that is basically... there's a demon amongst you. Figure it out. Like, I had to make some choices, and you have to suffer the consequences, and I'm sorry, but one of you is a demon. and also, confess your sins, or they'll come to light. And... wow, some things start to come to light about this family.
Look to your left, look to your right. If you don't see the demon,
it might be you. And it's really, really good, really interesting. And just like a fun mystery. Like a very, like, it's someone in this house. It's someone here. Who is it? Who's the demon? And they're all, like, finding things out about each other. But the main character, like, she's kind of the pariah of the family. She's one of the grandchildren. And basically her mom was the pariah of the family before her. And so now, like, all of her, like, aunts and uncles and cousins look down on her because they all kind of hated her mom. And hence the title, You Should Have Been Nicer to My Mom.
Real good.
And I'm currently reading two books. I'm listening to Nothing Tastes as Good by Luke Dumas, which is really interesting, like, diet culture horror.
Oh boy.
Yes. There is some sort of magical procedure that literally changes your genes to make you lose weight. Like, it, like, changes your, like, DNA, I think, at the cellular level.
And oh, surely, like, nothing can go wrong with that.
What could possibly go wrong? You can lose weight and not have to diet or exercise, and also everything in your life will start going super, super well. And if you maybe have cravings for human flesh, that's fine, right?
Totally normal.
Yeah.
That's that one. Do we not all have?
I mean, I
thought that was...
Is it a craving if you just regularly give in to it to keep it from happening? I've got kind of a human flesh, like, regimen going. I find that if I do it every 3 to 4 weeks, that I don't think about it constantly. And my iron levels have never been higher.
Beautiful.
Unrelated. I finally watched Sinners last night.
Oh, yeah!
I still see nothing wrong with being a vampire, and no. I want someone to turn me immediately.
Yes!
I'll make a few calls.
Thank you.
You gotta wait, though. It's still daylight.
They keep telling me vampirism is bad, and I keep not being convinced.
Yeah, everyone tries to make it seem awful, and
they're like, just, you don't want this? Yeah, I'm like, absolutely I do.
Sure do.
Yeah. I don't know, guys. I think you all need to go back and watch Near Dark. I think if Near Dark had blown up the way it should have, Twilight would have never happened and whatnot. Kathy Bigelow, Near Dark, perfect movie.
All right. I'm not convinced.
Oh, boy. It's... Everybody's super hot, but super bad.
I mean, listen, I'm not...
We don't normally record in here, and I have a rolly chair, and I can't stop scooting all over the place. So my energy is particularly weird. It's not just the human flesh, it's the rolly chair.
It's because we're not cramped in the back of a closet.
Yeah, we have so much room for activities.
So much more room for activities!
And then today I discovered that the next Rachel Harrison is on Edelweiss, and so all day today I've been reading Kiss, Slay, Replay, which is time loop horror!
Yes!
Yes!
Loop, there it is.
It comes out September 8th. I am trying my darndest to get her back here for that. It is time loop horror at a wedding. And I am in, like, the original part right now. And I'm, like, every time something happens, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see that again and how this changes in a future loop. That's going to be great. And there is a real scary masked killer. And I am here for it. I am loving it. So that's where I'm at.
Woo!
Hooray!
Excellente.
Books. Yay, books.
Do you want me to go?
I can go.
You can go. can do it.
I've read some books.
I have faith in you.
Whew. All right, let's see. We've got fake February to cover, and then also March. Okay, so. I read the new George Saunders pretty shortly after it came out, Vigil, which was, it's George Saunders, so it's good.
Yeah.
If you liked, if you loved, because that's the only real option, Lincoln and the Bardo, it's got very similar vibes to that. Saunders is a weirdo, like the rest of us, who is moderately obsessed with death and dying and
what
comes next.
Never.
That one's really good. This girl Jill is a ghost, I guess. Ghost-like. She gets sent back down to Earth when other people are about to die to sort of usher them through the process. Then this one guy is a piece of work. Shenanigans ensue, and it is a delight. It's also real short. I think I read it in, 2 days, and it was amazing. Nice. When Trees Testify, Science, Wisdom, History, and America's Black Botanical Legacy, by Baronda L. Montgomery, was pretty interesting, if you're into trees.
And everyone should be.
And everyone should be, because we wouldn't be here without them.
I don't know. Trees are great. That's why I hate books. They keep using trees to make books.
Yeah, they do that. This one, if you like books like Braiding Sweetgrass books of that nature, this is an excellent one to add to your list. It also, I wish I had brought either my copy or my notes with me, because there was one really funny line that I believe I read out loud. Nuts come from trees, and in one of the earlier chapters, I think it was about pecan trees, and there's a very silly line, if you are secretly a 12-year-old boy in a 38-year-old woman's body, about nuts, and it had me cackling.
It was very funny, I can confirm. It also had me cackling.
I feel so left out now.
I'm really sad that I don't have it with me. When Kate starts talking, I'll go grab a copy and then come report back to you.
Yes.
Fantastic. Stay tuned.
After that one, I read Devil is Fine by John Vercher, which my friend Sarah had texted me mid-January and was like, hey, I don't know if you have your lineup ready for Black History Month, but I just found out about this one because someone at work was talking about it, and it sounds up your alley. And boy, was she correct. I believe, aside from The Alchemist, which will always get 5 stars from me, this was my first 5-star book of 2026.
Nice.
It starts off real, real sad. Young kid, 17, 18, dies in a car accident. You don't really know any details. It, starts with, the line of traffic going from the, funeral service to the cemetery. And then as the story progresses, you find out more and more. Obviously, it's how stories work. But
you find out less and less.
In addition to eventually finding out what exactly happens to this kid, the real story is that dad, because son has died, now inherits what son was going to get from grandfather.
Oh, interesting.
This family is biracial. And what you are inheriting is not what you want if you identify as black.
Oh, no.
Bad shenanigans ensue. And then also there's some, like, real weird, I don't think it was totally necessary, but it did make it real fun, like, magical realism type. Maybe less emphasis, more emphasis on magic than on real, with, like, jellyfish.
Sure.
Ooh.
All right.
So if you look at the cover, there are two jellyfish and a pile of dirt, and eventually it becomes clear why, but is also just real weird. I also finally finished in February Never Whistle at Night.
Yes!
Which is such a good collection of stories.
There's another one coming.
I know! I'm so excited. I feel like we've, amongst the three of us, talked about this one enough. I don't need to do it again. But it was the first, I think, like, anthology where I pretty much loved all of them. There were, like, two that I was just like, eh. But everything else was like, yes, this is perfect.
That's awesome.
So good.
Yeah. And then I read The Alchemy of Us, How Humans and Matter Transformed One Another by Anissa Ramirez, which had been on my list for ages. I, like, randomly heard her on a podcast, like, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when, talking about writing that book. And it's, like, people, scientists who, like, discovered a thing, like, the thing that they discovered or invented, and then, like, how it sort of trickled out into, like, things we do now, too. It was really cool. It's not quite what I expected. I was under the impression that there would be, like, a little bit more emphasis on, like, black scientists and women scientists, and, like, there was, but, like, I don't know. I think I just wanted it to be like, ooh, she had found these stories that somehow have just, like, never been told before.
Sure.
And there was only a little bit of that.
Got it.
Yeah. But it was cool to get some, like, behind-the-scenes facts and stories of things, like, you know, the main thing, but then, like, ooh, there's also this other person who was involved.
Nice.
Yeah. It was good. Then I read The Arc of Cool Machine, which is Colson Whitehead's third Harlem trilogy book. And when we had gotten, like, a couple copies of this arc, and so, like, I stole one of them immediately because I am obsessed with this trilogy and with Colson Whitehead. And I had a bunch of other stuff to read first, and so I let my Bessie borrow it first, and he was like, yeah, it's pretty good, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's a little too clean for my taste. I was like, all right, your opinion doesn't matter here. But then Tim read it. Tim is, like, pretty into, I don't know the right word for this subgenre of books, but, like, sort of noir-y, like, gangster, mobster, whatever. I don't know. And he sort of agreed with Dennis. He was just like, yeah, like, it's just not quite gritty enough, because, like, Colson Whitehead writes too beautifully.
Yeah.
Which, yes, fair. And then I read it, and I was like, I don't know if I suffer from just, like, I don't remember details about books. I just remember that I love them. So, yes. Like, I don't totally remember the first two books. Well, I'm pretty sure this one was my favorite.
Nice.
Yeah.
I was like, you boys are stupid. This one is awesome.
Everything is perfect. And hey, podcast listeners, you get to be the first to know that Colson Whitehead is coming July 24th. He'll be at the Bank of New Hampshire.
We're so excited. We can't can't even talk about
it. Can't talk. I'll be at the Bank of New Hampshire stage on July 24th at 7 p.m. Oh, my God.
And I will not be in the parking lot reading you things, because I will be in there, and you need to be in there, too, because it's going to be so great.
It's
going to
be so great.
Ah, I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. I get to announce it soon. We're just waiting to find out who the NPR In Conversation partner will be, and then I get to announce it, yes. And tickets will go on sale, and all that jazz.
Yes.
Yay! Yes. In my head.
Oh, so exciting.
So exciting. After that, I jumped on the Dungeon Crawler Carl bandwagon.
Yeah, you did.
Woo-hoo. You joined the party.
I did, because book one finally came out in paperback, so I was like, okay, this looks like a normal-sized book now. I'm not going to, like, break my nose if I'm reading in bed at night and accidentally drop it on my face. Everyone already knows that's a good one.
Yep. Princess Donut.
No notes. I also finished Night Owl, which is a collection of poems by... Hold on. Ah, YouTube, why are you doing this to me? Stand by, everybody. I cannot pronounce this last name, no matter how hard I try. So I had it all queued up, and now it's gone. We have to listen to the bad typewriter first.
Hi, I'm Amy Nazika Matatil, and this is...
Yeah, her. Which you may remember from World of Wonders, which is the best collection of essays about bugs and animals that I've ever read in my life.
Heck yeah.
Nothing else I've ever read about fireflies has made me sob. I also learned from that book about one of my most favorite fun facts about monarch butterflies, which is when they're migrating and they get to this certain spot over Lake Superior, they all turn. There's nothing there, but like a million years ago there was like a mountain or some sort of obstacle, and now it's just in their DNA that they have to like turn. And then they can, like, turn back onto their primary course a little bit later on. And I will tell that to anybody almost unprompted at any time.
So it's great.
Hey, wanna know a thing?
So World of Wonders was great. That one's a few years old. Night Owl, her collection of poems, comes out, I think, in, like, a week or two. I had read an arc of it, and... I don't love poetry, but I really loved this collection of poetry. She just is, she writes so beautifully about nature and life, and I am not a mom or great with children, but she writes about her children in such a way that I was like, oh, maybe I'll go to bed a mom. These kids sound fun. So great job, Amy. Just keep writing about everything forever.
Heck yeah.
Last night I finished Fallen, which was about George Mallory and the tragic 1924 Everest expedition, by Mick Confrey, which George Mallory is British. This guy's British. Brits, why don't you put your punctuation in the right places?
Ooh, shots fired!
Periods and commas go inside of quotation marks.
Oh my God, yep. It drives me crazy.
So for like the first 50 pages, I was like, so mad. And then eventually I can just sort of ignore it and actually pay attention to what is being written. And if you like any sort of Everest lore at all, then yeah, this one's good. It's not really gonna be anything you don't already know, probably. There's like a few details about like George Mallory's earlier life that are not always told, which were interesting, but I never get sick of reading about Everest expeditions or just any sort of expedition, especially if it goes awry.
I got to explain to my children the other day that Everest is actually a real mountain and not just a roller coaster in the Animal Kingdom at Disney. I was like, no, it's a real,
it's a roller coaster based on a real mountain. It's called Expedition Everest because Everest is real. And they were like, oh. I was like, oh, no. Uh-oh.
We just ordered some magnets for the store that say something along the lines of, you know, take it easy on yourself because every dead body on Everest was once a highly motivated individual as well.
I
love you, Green Boots.
Love that.
Incredible.
And last but not least, I am currently reading, which I mentioned, Kate, while you were out of the room earlier, that I need an opinion of whether or not I can count something for one of the reading prompts.
Okay, I'm listening.
Ooh, judgment.
I'm ready to judge.
Hang on, we don't have the robes or the wigs. Okay.
Okay. Seasons of Glass and Iron. Which is the new collection of short stories. Well, they're older stories recollected into this very particular collection.
Yes.
Of Amal El-Motar. There's no A or the at the beginning, but otherwise it fits the a blank of blank and blank.
Oh! Wait, what's the title again?
Seasons of Glass and Iron.
I think it counts.
Yeah. Okay, that counts.
Yeah.
Yes!
We have ruled in your favor.
Excellent.
Bang!
Thank you. I've only read the first story so far, but it is very sweet, and I love it already, the book in general.
Of course. Of course.
Yes.
Incredible.
I brought mine home the other day. I haven't had a chance to crack it open yet, but I am very excited.
So good.
I just like that it's one of those books that look like that.
It is a book that looks like that. I have a couple books that look like that on my list today,
also,
too.
I just want to apologize that we haven't yet figured out what the book that the Gibson's booksellers won't shut up about is yet, because we all keep reading different things.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry.
If I can get everybody to read the book that I just finished, I mean, this is going to be the one that I never stop talking about this year.
Whoa. I tried to make it Meat Bees, but nobody caught on, so.
Oh, yeah, Meat Bees!
Maybe we'll catch on to Kate's.
Well, I haven't read Meat Bees yet, because Reed has it, so I have to take it from Reed, so then I can talk about Meat Bees.
All right.
But I just finished Dear Monica Lewinsky by Julia Langbein.
I saw you review for this, and I laughed very hard and said, color me intrigued. Sorry. Did not mean to interrupt you.
I loved it so much. It comes out not this Tuesday, but the following. It's also a book that looks like that. There's a lot of similar covers going on right now. But, oh, I'm so excited about this book. I have to cough again. Excuse me. It is phenomenal. I was drawn to it by the cover, which is obviously this fabulous title, Dear Monica Lewinsky, and then a medieval icon of Judith and Holofernes or Salome and John the Baptist, just holy lady hauling off some guy's head in two-dimensional art. It's wonderful. It's now a woman in her 40s gets an email from a from a former college professor with whom she had a dalliance back in 1998,
scandalous.
At the same time that the Monica Lewinsky scandal was breaking, and the entire world, including this 19-year-old woman, were ragging so hard on Monica. Mm-hmm. But she's an adult now. She sees the summer that this happened as the turning place that really changed who she is as a person and what she believes in and what her career and everything would be. And getting this email just shakes her out of kind of the quiet reverie she's been hiding herself in. And she dissociates at work, has a total meltdown, blacks out in the basement of a church, and comes to saying, help me, Monica, help me, Monica. And a true fire-wreathed saint of Monica Lewinsky in a beautiful blue chiton with a beret turned behind her as a halo appears.
Oh, and my God.
She's incredible and terrible and wonderful and has fire in her eyes. And she gets our poor dear Jean to recount the entire story of 1998 when she was a 19-year-old undergrad in the middle of France on this grad student trip with these esteemed professors where they were supposed to go all over this area of France and catalog and make a guidebook of forgotten churches in the area, mostly Romanesque churches. They're very snobby. They hate the Gothic things. And I hear that. The older stuff's better. But the whole book is this 19-year-old girl's story, plus all these lives of the saints, plus Monica Lewinsky, plus just the terrible behavior of men in power. And it goes into the golden legend and the lives of the saints and all sorts of Christian mythical asceticism and the desert mothers and how all of these women forever have had to atone for the passions of men, and they get cast into the wilderness and become saints, and the men just keep to, you know, read their golden books or publish their manuscripts as well-respected professors, or continue to be the president of the United States, or any number of things. And it is hilarious and upsetting and gross. And, oh, man, no one has ever so accurately nailed the language of a horny 19-year-old virgin.
Oh, amazing.
It is. Oh, this book is going to make you scream. I loved it so much.
I just realized that it's the author of American Mermaid, which I love.
Yes.
Yeah, I was looking at the, like, bookseller reviews on Edelweiss today to see, like, if anybody at the store had submitted a review that I had missed. And I just see from Kate, "I am filled with medieval levels of fire, rage, and blood, and nothing but Saint Monica Lewinsky can soothe this savage beast." And I went, okay.
And I wrote that in all caps at, like, 11:30 in the morning on a Saturday. So please, I love this book so much. So that's what I just finished reading. Beautiful. And that's the one that I'm never going to stop talking about. Okay. Dear Monica Lewinsky by Julia Langbein. It could be Bean, I could be saying it wrong. I'm sorry! And then to go back on the dichotomy of Kate, the other things I've been reading are picture books! Yeah! So there's I want to say a big trend, but it's two books. There are two children's picture books that are based on Herman Melville stories right now. There's Call Me Moby, written and illustrated by Lars Kenseth. And it is Moby Dick from Moby's point of view. And he's just a sea puppy who wants friends.
He just wants to play.
He doesn't understand why when he pops up to ask you questions like, "What's it like to have feet?" you poke him with sticks that tickle. He doesn't get it. He's delightful. And then the other is Bartleby, written and illustrated by Matt Phelan. And yes, Bartleby is Bartleby the Scrivener.
He would prefer not to.
He would prefer not to. He's a little bear in a hat.
His
teacher's name is Ms. Melville, and he has to learn to open himself up to other things. And it's adorable, and I love it so much. So now is your time. If you were working on a Herman Melville adaptation for children, strike while the iron is lukewarm. But I love these books. They're great. Then two wonderful picture books that center cats came out very recently. There's The Rare Bird by Elisha Cooper, which is just a beautiful, also illustrated by, just a beautiful meditation on creativity and imagination and dreamscape. It's the story of a day in the life of a rare bird. And as you're reading this book, it's not a bird, it's a house cat. Yeah. And the house cat is just describing everything he does all day in terms of being a bird, and it is so cute and sweet and wonderful. I think Kat said, "I want to cry, but I'm happy." Yes. That's it. Yeah. So that's The Rare Bird. And then the other is Kitty Caterpillar by Annabeth Bonderstone and Connor White, with illustration from Bridget Barriger. The art style is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. The cat is drawn like a psychedelic caterpillar from old Alice in Wonderland. The cat has all these legs and this fabulous fur and these antenna, and he's just a magic cat that goes on a little adventure in the garden, and it's just, it's some of the most unique art I've seen in a kid's book in a while. It's beautiful. I love it.
Amazing.
I also love Ruthie by Esme Shapiro, who also illustrated the book as well. Ruthie is my dog prince of the moment. He is a precious little prince who lives with the queen, and every day he eats... He eats his special pancakes, and his best friend is a 3-year-old piece of cake. And he gets out of the house and finds all his subjects and other people out in the wood and learns about the world at large and how he has to come home again to his special queen. And his special queen is just a lovely depiction of a, I don't know, funky lady somewhere in her 50s. I don't know. She's the best. I want to be her. They match. It's lovely. It's called Ruthie. It's great.
So cute.
Then in grown-up book world, I'm in the staff picks corner here. I love Cat's pick for this month, Lithium by Melan Denis. She's an Argentinian writer. I can't give you any recommendation better than what Kat wrote about it, so go read what Kat wrote and go read this book. But it, it read me for filth. It definitely found my poor behavior as a 20-something-year-old, and there it was in the pages, and it hurt, but it was perfect.
Amazing.
Also hurt, but perfect, Lauren Groff's new collection of short stories, The Brawler. Whew! Yeah. Ooh. Lauren Groff is one of the best living writers around, and she never misses. And there's nothing that I can say that Louise Erdrich, who, hello, another best living author, already said, that the opening story of Brawler is probably the best thing that Lauren Groff's ever written.
Wow.
It's just a few pages. It's absolutely electrically distressing. I don't want to tell you anything. You just have to read that story. So that's what I've been reading lately.
Michael really loved Brawler.
Yeah, I think he brought it up in his Louise Erdrich review.
Yes.
Because it's all a circle. Yeah. Now is the time of short stories.
Yes.
But yeah, Brawler is incredible. Mm. And it's also another book with a bright orange cover, which I like. Yeah. Last year was bright orange. This year is that teal color, but Brawler's holding strong with the orange. So that's what I've been reading lately.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Books.
Help me, St. Monica.
All right, Ashley, do you want to read the funny line from the tree book?
I do, yeah. Let me just go back a second and say that this book does actually teach you a lot of things. And also has quite a bit of, like, tragedy in it, but it's all tempered with gems like. On page 14, Veranda is teaching us about the pecan life cycle. Blah, blah, blah. Seedling stage, sapling stage. Around 6 years usually marks the transition of the tree from its first to its second decade of growth, and the mature stage, which is generally the longest stage of its life. The mature part of the life cycle is when the tree starts to bear its delicious nuts.
That's why I was laughing earlier.
Oh, yeah, that's... This is a family-friendly podcast.
Exactly. Okay. That's why I wrote it down.
Say that. And then, like, on the very next page, we're still talking about the life stages, and we're digging into seedlings and saplings a little bit more, and the roots. And she writes, "Once firmly established, the root system is critical to supporting the tree in reaching the height of approximately 1 meter, 3 feet, that for many trees, including pecans, officially brings them..." Oh, that's not even the right part. Blah, 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 blah. They're growing. The The abundance of sugars during this stage leads to a conversion of surplus sugar stores into starches or are linked in chains to form cellulose molecules that are ultimately used as building blocks to produce wood, supporting an increase in the girth of the sapling's hardening but still somewhat flexible trunk.
Trees!
Just like us!
What are you listening to? Nothing. Nothing. They're not giggling at tree girth.
Nope.
This is a very serious book
somewhat
cast.
Somewhat hard and strong.
Oh, what a great segue.
Into...
Not no. Yeah.
Into... We were talking about... What should we talk about this podcast? And I was like, I don't know. Spring books.
Spring has sprung.
It is girthy.
You guys are nuts.
Oh no. Oh Lord.
Insert boy here.
I could, but I'm gonna leave Kate's instead.
That's the right choice.
It's royalty free.
Yeah.
You don't have to pay Big Spring for it.
Sure don't. Oh my goodness. Yeah, spring books. I was like, I don't know, what do I read in the spring? I just keep reading horror. I don't change my reading for the seasons. I know some people do. I don't. And
what's more horrible than dead things returning to life?
Exactly. Tis the season. Always. But then I went, oh, bugs! And lucky for you all, we have a bugs display right now in the store, and most of it's horror. So, let me find the photo I took of it earlier. Nothing weird is happening here in this room. Don't worry about it. And let's talk about some bugs books, and then we'll talk more about other spring things. Wolfworm by T. Kingfisher just came out. I read this as a bound manuscript a million years ago, or like, I don't know, January. And
in this year of our Lord, 2026, was a million years ago.
That
was also 1 month ago, because there's no such thing as
redacted.
I can't even say it. My mouth is moving, but all that's coming out is just...
There is no anti-mimetics department.
Anybody else's nose bleeding?
So, Wolfworm is real gross. There are so many bugs. The main character is an artist who is hired to illustrate, like, the equivalent of, like, a bug encyclopedia book, but it's, like, the 1800s or something. So it's, you know, that. And weird stuff is going on, and there's real creepy, like, zombified critters that are trying to enter her room, and they're being, like, it's like a raccoon piloted by something.
Oh, boy.
And also, maybe there's a vampire?
Go on.
T. Kingfisher is the best. And Wolfworm rules. And I think my entire review on Storygraph was just bugs, gross! So, you know, 10 out of 10, no notes. Another one on the display that I actually have read is You Weren't Meant to Be Human!
Yeah. Oh, yes!
I finally read it! We've talked about it a ton here. You don't need to hear about it again, but I finally read it, and it's great.
Yay!
The Cut by C.J. Dodson is I've talked about that before. Super gross, weird, creepy crawlies and slithery things in the water, and it's bleh.
Just came out in paperback,
too. Just came out in paperback, and CJ will be here at the end of April for her new book called These Familiar Walls. That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Also on here is Brain Worms by Allison Rumfitt. Ooh! Oh! What a time that book is. I love that book. There's a character that you are following who has a parasitic fetish.
But also, you get to witness the very, very horrific death of the transphobic fantasy author.
Hmm. Oh no!
It's great. Other things on this display, we have The Nest by Kenneth Oppel. No, yes.
Yeah.
Illustrated by John Klassen. I zoomed in and saw John Klassen and I was like, ah! No, it is Kenneth Oppel and John Klassen. Fantastic book. You've got The Queen by Nick Cutter. That one's got a bunch of bees in it, I think.
Yes.
Of the meat variety?
No.
Or just regular?
I don't know. I haven't finished that one yet. I started it and I kept getting distracted while listening to it. And I was like, no, this one needs my full attention. So I put it on the back burner just for now.
Hearing buzzing in the background somewhere.
The Swarm by Andy Marino. She Is a Haunting by Trang Thanh Tran.
Ooh, yeah.
The Metamorphosis, obviously, by Kafka. Itch by Gemma Amor. That one's about ants. I've met her. She's lovely. Plain Bad Heroines, obviously, by Emily M. Danforth. Let's see, what else? Ooh, another Nick Cutter, The Troop.
Oh, yikes. That one's so gross.
Yep.
I mean, yikes in a good way.
Another T. Kingfisher, What Feasts at Night. Really, that whole series. Super gross. And then there's a few that I can't read because I took a real bad angled photo. So just come into the store and check out that display if you want. Bugs! Happy spring!
Excuse me, how is the Very Hungry Caterpillar not on that display?
We should put that dead center.
9 out of 10. I have a note.
They are on display in the kids' spring display.
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
But we should grab a copy and put it dead center in the middle of all of these horror novels about bugs and then just put the Very Hungry Caterpillar right in the middle.
Well, what is more horrible than you can't stop eating? You can't be sated. It's Tarar.
It's Tarar.
Oh my god, the Very Hungry.
He's just a tail! Maybe Tarar just became a butterfly!
It's all coming together.
Oh my god.
Also the Very Busy Spider?
Yeah.
Mm.
Which just
too busy to be on that list.
Too busy to be on that display, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, okay. There's the ladybug one too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could just recreate the display on the kids' side. But no. It's more fun if we put them on the adult side amidst all the horror.
Correct.
We could just have them, like, every other book is a kid's book.
Well, I mean, Kenneth Oppel, that is a youth fiction, a kid's book, and it is legitimately one of the creepiest things I've ever read. And I didn't read it as a kid. I read it as an adult.
Yeah, kids' horror slaps.
Yeah. That one is distressing.
What did I read? Another by Paul Tremblay.
Yeah.
So genuinely scary that, like, Cordy made me read ahead to find out what was going to happen so that I could report back and be like, no, it's going to be okay. And she was like, okay. Like, she made me read the last, like, 3 or 4 chapters before we finished it together because she was, like, genuinely pretty freaked out.
Oh.
And I was like, no, it's okay. Everything ends up okay. And she goes, how? And I said, let's read it. You'll find out.
Yeah. So cute.
Genuinely scary.
Oh, yeah. Eww. Sorry, I got the... I'm just thinking about papery wasp nest. Yeah, that one's really freaky. Ooh.
Who else wants to talk about spring books?
So you're talking about spring bugs. I'm going to talk about spring mud.
Mud.
Yes.
Season.
It is mud season.
Gross.
It doesn't matter if it is... in the 20s or the 60s, we're in that zone right now where New England is just mud.
It's all mud all the time.
All mud all the time. Even my dog is unhappy with how muddy it is.
Yeah.
A dog who's unhappy with the mud levels. Come on.
I wish my dog would have some better opinions about mud.
Yeah. Fenway loves a mud puddle, but she doesn't love just like squishy mud. She just kind of like picks her way through it, but ooh, if there's a big old puddle of water that happens to be made up of mud, she's taking a bath in it.
Oh, man. Ron almost got swallowed by quicksand at the park the other day. It was so muddy. Another man helped me get him out.
Oh, it was
poor buddy. I mean, ugh, mud.
Ron.
But just because mud is awful doesn't mean that there aren't good books with mud in them.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Go on.
So, one of my favorites came out maybe 2 years ago now. It's called Poor Deer by Claire Oshetsky, and it is New England Gothic. I mean, Southern Gothic gets so much attention, but mud season New England, where your shoelaces are always wet, the bottom of your pants is always dragging in something. It doesn't matter where you are, you can see a crumbling mill town. Like, everybody's working really hard in their garden, but you can't stop the decay.
Yep.
Any street you walk down, people stop and look at you like you're a monster. Whether or not you're covered in mud. I love New England Gothic. So Claire Oshetsky's New England Gothic. Poor Deer. Just, it's a magical realism fairy tale around a truly tragic situation where two little girls are playing unsupervised and one dies. And just, you're left with the living one and how she's kind of compartmentalized and built herself away from this situation that happened. And then the hallucinations that she has of the quote-unquote poor deer who come to guide her through what's next.
Oh, amazing.
So, mud! Woo!
Mud!
Also muds. Also muddy bogs. I know that I've talked about bogs and bog-esque things a million times on this podcast, but that won't stop me now from once again shouting out Kay Chronister's Bog Wife, which doesn't even take place during spring, but oh, it's so muddy. It's so muddy. I mean, they put together a whole bunch of plant matter and throw it into a bog to try to assemble a woman out of mud. Mud! Ghost Wall by Sarah Moss is also an archaeological dig around a peat bog, and they're not going to be happy with just recreating and reliving this whole situation. They're going to have to sacrifice somebody for real in order to actually feel what this feels like. These researchers are bananas. That's Sarah Moss's Ghost Wall. Then Alan Garner's Treacle Walker, which is also just set in swampy, fenny, boggy, fairy tale-esque England. It's hard to tell how much of it is based in folktale and how much of it is just created whole cloth by Alan Garner. It's maybe 60 pages long and it's going to make you feel super gross, but you're never going to stop thinking about it.
Yeah. It's like a win, honestly.
Yeah. Then possibly the muddiest book of all time, based on a very muddy situation, All Quiet on the Western Front.
Oh!
Yep. That's you don't need me to tell you how muddy that is. And I'm not gonna make some ham-fisted war, the meaning is muddy. No, these poor kids were just trampled to pieces in the mud. Ugh, disgusting. On a happier note, The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry. They're out finding ammonites and maybe a dinosaur in the coastal estuary mud. So hooray!
Yay, mud!
Yay, mud! Not quite Yay Mud, but Edgar Cantero's Meddling Kids, which is a grown-up take on what happened to the Scooby-Doo kids and their situation, and they get pulled into a Lovecraftian nightmare with all sorts of slime monsters in a cave.
That's awesome. It is great. I need to read that, and then I never did.
Oh, I can't believe you haven't!
Well,
oh,
it like came out and I was like, I'm gonna read that, and then I was reading a bunch of other stuff at the time and then it just vanished and I have ADHD, so it stopped existing in my brain.
It has a real cool cover, so I look at it all the time, so it still exists. I'll bring it to you.
Thank you. That's
a good muddy romp for everyone. Now that we're covered in bugs and filthy with muck, Ashley, what do you have for us?
My list feels so boring now compared to those, because I think spring and I think that I just want to get outside and do stuff again, mm-hmm. which makes it sound like I haven't been doing stuff all winter, which is a lie.
You're never inside.
Ashley was hibernating.
By skiing?
Ski-bernating.
Ski-bernating, yeah. So my list is, outdoorsy books. Woo!
Mud's outside.
It adds so our bugs. Yeah.
It's our meat bees. Honorable mention for meat bees.
They might be inside your meat, though.
Careful.
No, I don't like that.
Sorry, Ashley.
Anywho, books about doing stuff outside.
Running, jumping, climbing trees.
Yeah, and also water. The first one I thought of was River Man, which I believe was my very first, like, staff pick.
Yay!
Pretty sure it was, yes.
A million years ago. This one's by Ben McGrath, and it is about this amazing, crazy, out-of-control guy, Dick Conant, who just, like, canoed everywhere, like, solo. Just miles and miles and miles of rivers under his boat. also technically his feet, I guess, because they were... anywho.
Beneath his waders and the waves.
But so this guy is just... He lived this amazing life paddling everywhere, and just, like, everyone who met him loved him because he's this super interesting dude. And then he... I think it was, like, in 2014... was on a trip from New York, I think, like, down to Florida, and just disappeared in, like, the Outer Banks in North Carolina.
No!
And, like, a few months went by, and, like, his canoe washed up somewhere, but, like, and had some of his stuff still in it, but, like, I don't think they know where he is, like, still.
Have they checked the mud?
I'm sure they have.
Sticky situation.
But maybe it was a quicksand situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, now I might be lying to you because I don't remember details. Maybe they did eventually find his body somewhere and I just forgot that part because it's a better, somehow less sad story if he's still just out there.
What's that knocking on the door?
Because maybe he's just a mud monster now.
He's here!
That's a great book. You should read it. Other outdoorsy books, anything Ty Gagne writes,
yes.
which are not springy. Pretty sure all three of them are about winter shenanigans.
But there's snow up there in them mountains year-round.
Not our mountains year-round, but for a while through the spring.
Yeah.
And just all three of his books are so good in fairly devastating ways. Just, you know... It's good to remember sometimes that the mountains are trying to kill you.
and you deserve it.
Yeah,
I mean...
Think about it.
Yeah, you know what you did.
You know what you did. The mountains know. They're older than
the
old.
The mountains remember.
Other...
The North remembers.
On that note, other things are trying to kill you, too, in Jenny Kiefer's This Wretched Valley.
Yay!
you gonna make it, Kate?
I don't know.
Kate keeps swallowing weird.
I've been alive for 50 years, and it hasn't gotten easier yet.
Too many bubbles in that seltzer.
I know, I need flat water. The seltzer's too exciting
this
for me.
Too spicy for you. anywho, This Wretched Valley, Jenny Kiefer, just some, like, you know, real fun rock climbing horror, and the forest is trying to kill you, because why are you there?
Because you deserve it!
You deserve it!
In non-murdery notes, on a non-murdery... Words are hard on a Sunday night, guys.
Yes.
Leave it's Only true. Footprints by Connor Knighton. Was a very fun, I guess technically like a memoir. He went to every national park in the U.S. in a year.
Ooh.
So the
That's
like
so impressive.
Cute little tagline is something like from Acadia to Zion.
Yeah.
but it's just, it was really fun. Like he pulled it off, which is
so impressive.
Incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and so, like, I I would love to go to every national park, but, like, I don't want to squish them all into 1 year, because that sounded like a lot of work.
That's a lot of work, a lot of travel.
Yes.
And, like, you just don't get to, like, spend as much time in all of them as you would probably like to.
Yeah.
But if you need some, like, national park-specific inspo, that's a good one. Mm. I also have Will to Wild by Shelby Stanger, who, she has a podcast, like, with REI, called Wild Ideas Worth Living that I love. And this book was basically just, like, that podcast in book form. So she interviews people who've had, like, these wild ideas. It's what she named the podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they just, like, they just go for it. And so she's talked to people who just do, like, crazy, like, I'm surprised she hasn't talked to Connor Knighton about going to every park in a year.
Yeah.
But, like, stuff like that. Just people who take on these really, like, big, audacious, outdoorsy goals. And they have real cool stories to tell about them. So if you listen to that podcast but have not read the book yet, what are you doing? If you've read the book but didn't know she had a podcast, go find it, because every episode is awesome. And then some others, A Walk in the Woods, Bill Bryson.
Yay!
It's a classic for a reason. Into the Wild, John Krakauer.
Yep.
Also a classic for a reason. The Nature Fix by Florence Williams. I had to read that for, I think it was when I did, like, a backcountry yoga teacher training thing. And it is just, like, nature literally, like, makes you happier. Like,
yeah,
just people tell you to go touch grass for a reason.
Because you deserve it. Because you feel better.
Because you need it. Yep. And so that one is just, like, a really interesting deep dive into, like, what exactly is going on, like, in your brain, in your body, when you are out in nature, and why it is so much better out there than indoors.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one that I loved, and I think had to read for the same thing, if not for that training, I just, like, stumbled upon it simultaneously and read it around that same time, was On Trails by Robert Moore, which is, like, not so much about hiking the trails, but, like, the trails themselves. Like, how did they get there? Why do we love them so much? Like, super interesting stuff that you, like, don't ever really think about. And then he's got a new one coming out that I, like, saw the arc a while back and got real excited and grabbed it. Have not read it yet. It comes out next week or in 2 weeks. But it's called In Trees. So I'm sure it's the same sort of thing, but trees instead of dirt. And then the last two, Jack Kerouac's The Dharma Bums and Desolation Angels, which are two, read Dharma Bums first, then Desolation Angels. That is the correct order of them. They are his. And then, if we're getting technical, then read On the Road. But anywho, they're his, like, semi-autobiographical novelizations of his time, like, in the woods in the West, and then, like, he did a stint in a fire tower. And there's, I mean, I don't know why they don't get as much love as On the Road, because they are as good, if not better.
Heck yeah.
But, I like them better.
And then just, like, yeah, they're more, like, nature-y and outdoorsy, so if you prefer that sort of bent in your book, pick them up.
Amaze, amaze, amaze.
Yay, books.
Spring has sprung.
Woo.
Sprung.
Oh.
I forget why this is here.
Yeah.
And I'm sad that it didn't come up at any point.
Oh, a book that the booksellers are currently obsessed with in the store is an illustrated guide to birds that sound like insults.
Would you please demonstrate, Kate?
Sure. So, you open up to a page. There is a picture of a bird. The bird has its real name, and it offers you an insult, such as, "Okay, I'll say it slower for you, you straw-headed bulbul." Yeah, you Rufus-rumped seed-eater? Shut the hell up, you common babbler! Do you even own a shirt, you red-necked grebe? It's just pages and pages of these. And it's, oh, God, there are no misses, and you can use them in so many occasions. I cannot wait to say to someone, what's that supposed to mean, you ashy tit? And it's not swearing, because it's bird names.
It's a bird!
It's a bird.
So if you've come in lately, and you've heard me mouthing off at the counter with vaguely Shakespearean insults, it's this book, An Illustrated Guide to Birds That Sound Like Insults. And it absolutely rules.
It's so good! We discovered it. Well, we had seen it. And, like, flipped through it, but hadn't, I think, given it its due. And then we had an event one night, and Kate, like, grabbed it and brought it behind the register and just started shouting bird-related insults while the author was signing. And it was so funny. Oh, man.
I love this book.
Way to go, you flammulated owl. Yeah, this is pretty great.
Like, the first time I picked it up, I didn't notice the insult page. I, like, flipped to, like, I opened to a random page and I saw, like, all the info and I was like, oh, that's funny. Like, they sound like insults and then there's all the real info. And then I didn't look at the literal other side of the page that has the insult on it. Otherwise, I would have fallen in love with this book a lot earlier.
I had done the same thing. I figured it was another one of those, just lists of, did you know how many birds are called booby? Ha 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 ha. This one says pecker. But these actually, they give you an example, and on the mirroring page where they tell you a little bit about the bird, they also give you a list of suggestions for the type of person you can insult with these.
That's really good.
Ooh, really, really speaks to me.
Let me present to you figure 28. Where do you buy pants, you long-legged buzzard? And on the opposing page, it tells you that this is perfect for insulting clowns on stilts, rude basketball players, and Jack Skellington.
Which is our main demographic.
Oh, wait, I'm gonna yell those at, like, Josh Malerman and Paul Tremblay. That's great.
I got Jim with a couple yesterday, and I think he thought I was genuinely insulting him until I held the book up.
Wait.
Keep going.
It also tells you the signature bird song for these birds. I present to you figure 31. Think, you three-wattled bellbird. And the three-wattled bellbird's signature bird song is an alien-esque metallic ee sound that you'd half expect to come out of Mark Zuckerberg's mouth.
This book is perfect.
This book is perfect. This might be the one we don't show about.
Oh my God. What a perfect ending note. I am so happy.
I can't believe I didn't think to do birds. You did bugs. You did mud. I am in my bird era. And yet.
You'll get it next time, you dull-colored grass quit. Don't be so hard on yourself, you butt-throated wood creeper. You can use them as terms of endearment as well.
Perfect.
Oh my God, you can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com for a shoppable list of all the books we've discussed during this episode, and especially for this bird book. You can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on most of them. All those links will be in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore.
You yelly-bellied woodpecker!
Bye!